we finished our gimel, but there's one more thing I wanted to make. That's actually very dramatic. Rav Chaim writes that this is in Perek Yudalit, Shar Gimel Perek Yudalit, that there is a chiluk between the madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Avos. That the Avos had a madrega, Moshe Rabbeinu had a madrega that even the Avos were not able to reach. And the distinction was in these two levels of understanding godliness. The Avos understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator of the world, he maintains the world, and their tachlis is to bring his presence into the world. And that's what it means that they are their merkava, they are like the chariot. God, as it were, rides in the world by the teachings of the Avos. But the Avos did not reach the Hasaga that they literally don't exist. Meaning they understood the idea, what is called Mitzidenu. Remember, Rav Chaim says there are two perceptions of reality. Mitzidenu, we are autonomous and independent beings that are subservient to the Almighty. That is our perception, and that is why we live in a world of free will, where we are given a capacity to make choices, but we have to try to make our choices in accordance with the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But all of that is only a reality mitzidenu from our perception, because otherwise everything is holy, everything is equal, there would be no sense of boundaries, there would be no sense of differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov, Shabbos and Chol, Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. You can learn Torah in a bathroom. The whole world of Torah is gebayt on the notion that there is a certain separation from Hashem, and then we have to serve Hashem. But in the ultimate reality of things, ein od milvado does not simply mean there is no other God but God, but it literally means there is no other Metzias, meaning all we are concentrations of divine energy that are arranged in certain what you might call molecular patterns, which are the letters of the Aleph Beis that reflect spiritual powers when they are combined in certain ways. And that speech of Hashem is the same as his essence, because Hashem is not divisible into speech and thoughts and body or whatever it would be. Which would mean, I mentioned before, you know, the old joke of Mark Twain, when Chava asked Adam, why did you name this animal a lion? And Adam responded, well, it looks just like a lion. What did you expect me to name it as? So it's a joke, it's a leitzonus. But if you take it in Hebrew, it is 100% the answer. Why did Adam name an Aryeh a lion? Because Adam had spiritual X-ray vision. What is a lion? A lion is the divine energy that emerges from Aleph, Resh, Yud, He, when combined in that particular order. It's like a chemical reaction. Every letter is a channel of divine energy. Aleph has an energy, Resh has an energy, Yud has an energy. But it's not just the energy of the letters, it's the energy of the words, the sequence in which the letters are represented. So, when the energies of Aleph, Resh, Yud, He are combined in that order, there is a lion. So Mark Twain was mechaven to both the Nefesh HaChaim and the Baal HaTanya. Adam named it a lion, meaning with the Hebrew words. Adam named it an Aryeh, because that's what it is. This is why the Ramban writes, Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh. The Rambam says Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh because there are no sexual words, explicitly sexual words or pornographic words, which is really a negative that Hebrew does not have, only uses euphemisms for those things. Ramban says a more positive reason, that the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis are channels of spiritual energy through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created heaven and earth, the whole universe. And to take it deeper, Rav Chaim says, we are nothing but configurations of divine energy. Now Rav Chaim said, from our perspective, we're not supposed to live that way, because then we would not imagine there is such a thing as a capacity of choice. So we live in a double reality. He doesn't quite explain what that means. And you know, whenever we talk about that, there's always going to be a conceptual difficulty. But we live in a double reality. The reality that we are autonomous agents of free will, and the inner ultimate reality that all we are concentrations of divine energy. And the true meaning of Ein Od Milvado is not there is no God except God, but there is nothing except God. Now again, Rav Chaim emphasizes the double perspective, because the danger of everything is God could lead to pantheism, it could lead to idolatry, it could lead to not doing mitzvot. So Rav Chaim is always going back and forth. So he says, this was the nafkamina between the Avais and Moshe Rabbeinu. The Avais understood that God is the only God, but the Avais did not yet comprehend the idea that there's literally no Messias besides Hashem. That's why, you'll remember, Avraham called himself Afor V'Efer, I am dust and ashes. Now, dust and ashes may be very insignificant, but it is something. Moshe Rabbeinu said, he and Aaron said, Nachnu ma, what are we? We are what? We are nothing at all. That's a higher madrega. Now, Avadi, intellectually, the Avos understood that as well, but they didn't quite reach the madrega where they perceived that reality. And that's why he writes that Moshe Rabbeinu reached a madrega that nobody has ever had except Adam HaRishon before the Chait. And when Mashiach comes, we will reach that. Everybody will reach that madrega as well. But until then, Moshe Rabbeinu is the only person who reached that level. So because of this, Rav Chaim then says a very, very startling thing. He says, let's look at V'hayayim Shemoa. Look at the second paragraph of Shema. So in V'hayayim Shemoa, Moshe Rabbeinu, well, let me backtrack a little bit. Let's look at the Book of Devarim generally. The Book of Devarim is written in a different form than the rest of the Torah. It's been pointed out by the Ramban, by other Rishonim, that the Torah normally employs what is called a third-party narrative voice, meaning, and God spoke to Moshe. There's a narrator. The narrator is Hashem. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. The Book of Devarim is not written in third person. The Book of Devarim is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking in his own voice. He'll say, Hashem spoke to me. As Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking in his own voice. As an aside, people ask the obvious question. The Gemara, in fact, says that the whole Torah are the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Book of Devarim are Moshe Rabbeinu's own words. In the last month before his death, it's Moshe Rabbeinu's own words. This is actually the Lashon of the Gemara in Megillah, that Kol HaTorah Kula is Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sefer Devarim is Divrei Moshe. That's the Gemara in Megillah. Now the question is, well, wait a second here. What does that mean? Do we not paskin that if I believe a single letter of the Torah was made up by Moshe, that he did not hear from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That's apikarsis, that's kefira, that's a denial in the entirety of the Torah min HaShemayim. There's a machlokas with the last eight verses, which are written after Moshe died. That's a machlokas. But certainly, there's no concept that the whole book of the Torah are Moshe Rabbeinu's own words. So how do you reconcile the idea that every word of the Torah is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the idea that in the book of Devarim, Moshe is speaking in his own voice? That's not how do you understand the Gemara? So I'll just mention, it's not directly Nogaya here, but it'll connect. The Abarbanel writes in the Hakdama to the book of Devarim that you have to differentiate between the spoken word and the written word. For example, a lot of what is in the Torah are quotations of people. The Torah quotes Lavan saying things, Paro saying things, Kayin saying things, Dathan and Aviram, Korach saying things. Now, did God tell them ahead of time what they were to say? Presumably not. What they said was their bechira. They decided to do good, they decided to do bad. So in a sense, their words are not God's words. Their words are their own words. Right? What Paro said to Moshe is Paro's words, not God's words. Elamai. So why do I say it's mipi Hashem? Because nothing was written down in the Torah until Hashem told Moshe what to write down. Paro could have said a gazillion things. Hashem determined, for whatever the reason of the ultimate wisdom, what of those words should be written down. So the Abarbanel says, the book of Devarim is exactly the same way. In the rest of the Torah, Hashem gave Moshe what to say, and Moshe said it. In the book of Devarim, Hashem did not tell him ahead of time what to say. Moshe Rabbeinu gave his own Musar Shmus. But what was written in the Torah was only what was dictated by Hashem. So every letter in the Torah was dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was no letter in the Torah that was written down without Hashem saying it. But Moshe was not given the script ahead of time. In the rest of the Torah, Hashem tells him, say this. Sefer Devarim, Hashem didn't tell him, say this. Moshe said it on his own. But the same way, Lahavdil, Paro's words are later dictated by God to Moshe to write down. Moshe's words are dictated back to Moshe to write down. And Moshe Rabbeinu could have said many other things that were not there. Now obviously, the Torah is 2,000 years before the world was created, 2,000 generations, rather, before the world was created, whatever that means. But nevertheless, the Torah as we have it does comprise dialogue and events and things that happened. And when those things happened, Hashem did not, even though Hashem had the Torah ahead of time, that's a bit of a mystery, Hashem didn't tell Paro what to say at that point. Remember, the hardening of Paro's heart didn't occur until the second five plagues. Hashem didn't tell Korach to do what he did. So when we say it's all from God, we mean after the fact, Hashem determined what should be inscribed in the Torah. And that's what we mean by the book of Devarim. So now you understand the Gemara's point. The rest of the Torah, Hashem told Moshe what to say. In the book of Devarim, Hashem did not tell Moshe what to say, but he did tell Moshe what to write after the fact. Okay, Beseder. But be it as it may, stylistically, it's undeniable. Yeah.
Whatever we speak out, is that included under
Shemayim? Well, certainly if it pertains to listening to Hashem or not listening to Hashem. So, I mean, if Paro said something, whatever it is, Hashem did not make him do it. The hardening of Paro's heart occurred later, not initially. So when he said, Mi Hashem, Asher Eshma Bakolo, that would have been his Bechira. Now, the fact that Hashem had those words in Shemayim, okay, that's a bit of a mystery. The Gra says that the celestial Torah in Shemayim that predated the creation of the world was not broken up into words. It was an unbroken sequence of letters.
Who says that?
The Gra. So consequently, Hashem's Torah did not yet say, Paro said, Mi Hashem. There were letters that represent the name of God. And the, which means, again, it's a fascinating question. That would mean, theoretically, those letters could have been broken up in different ways depending on how the story would have unfolded, which is a function of Bechira. It's a very, very complicated idea because at this point, you have Hashem's eternal Torah, which seems to be contingent on the Bechira of people at every single stage. What if the Jewish people wouldn't have said Nasa? Okay. So according to one Chazal, they were forced into it. But what if they wouldn't have said Nasa v'nishma? What if Paro would have said, sure, leave right away? There wouldn't have been 10 makas. Right. In other words, how do you, you know, what form would the Torah have taken? You know, I don't know. It's a very, very difficult question. But at least lefi pshuto, people who did good or did bad generally were acting in the world of Bechira. So Behechrich Hashem didn't tell them what to say, but it's called Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu because the writing of it was Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now Rav Chaim says like this. So going back to Rav Chaim. So the one thing that you can't deny is that the book of Devarim is written in third person. Moshe says, and Hashem speaks to me. That's why the first parsha of Shema is the way it's written. V'yahavta, Moshe is speaking to Bnei Yisrael, and he says, V'yahavta es Hashem Elokecha, you shall love God. Moshe is talking. These were Moshe's words originally. You shall love Hashem with all of your heart and all of your soul and all of your mind. Right? A man is speaking. You shall love Hashem, like a Rebbe giving a Musar Shmos. But now we have a problem. V'hayayim Shamoa. V'hayayim Shamoa. Moshe is still talking. V'hayayim Shamoa Tishmu el mitzvosai. If you listen to my mitzvos that I am commanding you this day to love Hashem, I will give you rain. What's going on here? Moshe is still the speaker. And he's no longer saying, Hashem will give you the rain. He says, I will give you the rain. Who's the I? Who's the I in that pasuk? Obviously, it's Hashem. But if Sefer Devarim is Moshe is the speaker, then how can Moshe say, I will give you the rain? So Rav Chaim says something that's absolutely astounding. He said that because Moshe Rabbeinu had reached the Madrega, that he literally did not exist except as a concentration of divine energy, then literally it is, this is what Chazal have a lashon, the Shekhinah is speaking out of the throat of Moshe. This is not just understood as the voice of God is coming out of his throat. It's a different thing. It's, he ceased to exist. All he was a concentration of molecules of divine energy.
Isn't it like a malach?
It's like a malach. Again, malachim also sometimes speak in first person in the name of Hashem. So, in a way, this is kind of scary because imagine if Chassidus Rebbe were to start speaking this way. If you keep my commandments, I will give you rain. I will give you hatzlacha. I mean, it's a little scary, as if the person is proclaiming himself to be God. But Rav Chaim says Moshe Rabbeinu reached a madrega where there was literally no metzias there. Of Einod Movadai. And that's why he could switch into this first person. In spite of the fact that Sefer Devarim is always Moshe Rabbeinu is a narrative. He is the narrative voice. So it shouldn't have said, V'hayam Shemoa Tishmu El Mitzvosai. He should have said, V'hayam Tishma El Mitzvos Hashem Elokavas, as the Torah writes. Consider the Tokacha, right? If you keep, Tokacha says, if you keep Hashem's Mitzvos, Hashem will give you. Right? Doesn't say, if you keep my mitzvos, I will give you. So, Rav Chaim does not explain. So if Moshe Rabbeinu reached this madrega, then why does he sometimes say it one way, sometimes say it the other way. Why does he sometimes say, most of the time, Hashem will reward you, Hashem will punish you? And rarely he says, I will reward you, I will punish you. It seems that even Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps did not sustain this madrega every single second. He moved, I mean, we're talking about such an unbelievably high madrega, but at that highest, highest level, he kind of moved in and out of it at various times. And when he had a sense of himself as a separate existence, he said, Hashem will reward you. When he totally lost a sense of himself as a Metzias, he said, I will reward you. So it's the opposite of egotism. You see, this is such an interesting difference. We would think, if somebody got up and said, keep my commandments or I will punish you, we would look at that as the supreme exercise of misplaced egotism. Who does this guy think he is? But Rav Chaim is saying, in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's exactly the opposite. Because he was nothing, all there was Hashem. So it's Hashem. Right? It's not egotism, it's exactly the opposite. It's a total hispatlus, a total nullification of what the person is. So again, this was such an amazing thought that I wanted to be sure to get it. And this is in Perek Yud Dalet of Shar Gimel. Okay, we now come to, as I mentioned last week, an intermediate section of Nefesh HaChaim that is not consecutively numbered, right? We have three gates, and then we have the fourth gate, which is the famous gate in the world of the yeshivas about Talmud Torah. So it's Shar Dalet. But between Shar Gimel and Shar Dalet is an intermediate section, which is not numbered. I mean, it has chapters in it. And it's called Prakim, assorted chapters. And just in terms of the history of what this represents, people raise the obvious question, why didn't Rav Chaim, this is in the book, why didn't Rav Chaim just call it Shar Dalet? And Shar Dalet would be Shar Hei, right? It's good. Chamisha Chumse Sora, five Shar Menefesh HaChaim. So it's interesting that I actually read that the Nefesh HaChaim was printed in two ways. There was a Nefesh HaChaim with the Prakim, which is what we have, and there was a Nefesh HaChaim without the Prakim, and Rav Chaim wanted the Prakim to be something that could be taken out, if necessary. I'll explain why. Meaning, the reason why he didn't number it is, if he would have called it Shar Dalet, and then it would be printed without it, you would be going from Gimel to Hay. So he wanted to create a numbering system that did not depend on whether the Prakim were in there or out. And in some cities, Nefesh HaChaim was printed with the Prakim, which is our edition, of course. And in some cities, it was printed without the Prakim. And that, some want to say, was Rav Chaim's Etzem Kavanah. What's going on? I mean, why would he have in some cities printed without the Prakim? Because in many ways, the Prakim is the strongest criticism of Chassidus in the book of Nefesh HaChaim. Rav Chaim, as it were, I don't want to say the phrase, takes off the gloves in the sense that the whole Sefer Nefesh HaChaim is a gentle critique of certain aspects of the Hasidus movement. I'll go over what they are. But most of the Nefesh HaChaim is overwhelming with proofs. So Rav Chaim might say one point, and then, in fact, one of the interesting phenomena of the Nefesh HaChaim is how Rav Chaim, some say, overproves every point. So if Rav Chaim says something, he will not bring one Zohar, he will bring 10 passages of the Zohar. Much more so than the Tanya or Mesilas Yesharim, how many, they don't bring a lot of proofs to everything. Rav Chaim brings proof after proof after proof after proof. And part of why he did so was that the basic idea, and again, this permeates virtually every page of Nefesh HaChaim, so even though I've said this many, many times, but the Mechaber himself says it many, many times. The fundamental issues that were being faced at the time was that the Misnagid, I'm going to simplify, but it's basically true. The Misnagid world emphasized the most important thing in being a Jew is Limud HaTorah and Shmiras HaMitzvos, following the halacha properly. The Hasidic world, at least before the Baal HaTanya, was moving in a direction emphasizing the notion of kavana, devekus, serving Hashem lishma, the idea that the most important thing is not doing the mitzvah, the most important thing is the kavana that you have, in the sense that mitzvahs and Torah learning are not ends, they are means. Now, at the highest level, whether it's the Gra or whether it's the Baal Shem Tov, there's really no disagreement at all. Rav Chaim Volozhiner would say, or the Gra would say, Kavana is important and Mais is important. And the Baal Shem Tov would say, Kavana is important and Mais is important. It was really a question of emphasis. The Gra tended to emphasize Maisa and Limud, and the Baal Shem Tov emphasized Kavana. In a sense, it's not a machlokas. It's a question of emphasis. But what happened, what was beginning to happen, was that each group were taking the dominant emphasis of their Rebbe and they were turning it into an exclusive emphasis. So among many misnagdim, the concept of devekus, of thinking about your mitzvahs, of trying to develop an emotional relationship with God, was something that was foreign. It was treated like Christian. It wasn't treated as a Jewish thing. Just learn and do mitzvahs. Don't think about connecting to Hashem. At the other end of it, there were certain aspects of Chassidus that said, the only thing that matters is Devekus. So if Sof Zman Kriya Shema is 9 o'clock in the morning, or 8 o'clock in the morning, and if you sleep another 3 hours, you'll say Kriya Shema with more Kavana. Better to sleep another 3 hours and have kavana than to keep Shema Kahalacha. So the fancy English word for this was that in the early generations of Hasidus, there was a very strong antinomian pull. Antinomian is just a fancy word that means against halachic practice. Because there was a sense that halacha was seen as a stira to devekas, because it makes me too obsessed with details, obscuring the notion of connecting to Hashem. I'm in the middle of a Seder, and I'm dovok in kavana. And somebody says, hey, 1:05, gotta eat the afikoman. What are you doing to me? Right? But that's what halacha sometimes does, right? Halacha sometimes says, you know, you're holding in a very high madrega, but you got to eat the apikomen before chatzos, rizman kriya shma. So, what the Nefesh HaChaim does throughout the Sefer is to try to, what you might say, defend the misnaged shita, but also adding the good things of chassidus as well. In other words, the primary argument of Nefesh HaChaim is that indeed the ikar of a person's life is Torah and mitzvahs. And one has to be very, very careful not to allow your devekus to undermine your Torah and mitzvahs. But then, he also says, but as one grows in avoda, you should emphasize ava and yira. Now, the Baal HaTanya does the same thing, just starting from the opposite standpoint. In other words, just as Rav Chaim emphasizes the primacy of Maisa to be augmented by Kavana, the Baal HaTanya, starting with the importance of Kavana, emphasizes how vital Maisa is. That's why you have to understand that the Baal HaTanya's Sefer was not only controversial among Misnagdim, it was very controversial among Hasidim. Many, many Hasidim who were not his followers were totally against his Sefer. They called him, he was the only one of the early Hasidic Rebbe's who was a Litvak, and in many ways his Hashkafa was a Litvisha Hashkafa. He was almost the most, in some ways, the most non-Hasidic Rebbe that there was, because he emphasized all of the things that Rav Chaim Volozhiner does. So, the reason why the Nefesh HaChaim brings so many proofs, one after the other, is because Chassidus was based on the teachings of Kabbalah. Chassidus was based on all of the passages in the Zohar and the Kitzvei Ari that talk about Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, and Maisim without Kavana don't matter. And you're learning Torah not Lishma, it's not so. You know, there are passages that say it's worth nothing. So Rav Chaim needs to come back. He can't bring rayas from Gemaras. He has to bring rayas from the very Makairas that Chassidus was shayev from. And that's why he overkills. That's why he'll bring not two rayas, he'll bring 6 rayas, 10 rayas, 15 rayas. And always from the Kitzvei Ari, always from the Zohar, because he wants to bring from the very rayas that early Chassidus brought Fakert, to move in the other direction. This is also Masber, another interesting observation people make. Everyone knows how Oduk Rav Chaim was to the Gra. Rav Chaim was the Talmud Mufik of the Gra. Although he was already the Rav of Elazhin when he met the Gra. He was not a Talmud in the sense that he was always there. He had a job. But he would take off. He would take off a month at a time, 2 months at a time to ask the Gra all of his shailas. And Rav Chaim was considered, even by the Gra's own children who were great Talmudei Chachamim, Rav Chaim was considered to be the Talmud Mufak. Although it's interesting, Lagabi Minhagim, he is not the most authoritative source. It's brought down that in the Maaseh Rav, which is a compendium of the Minhagei Hagra written by Dayanim in Vilna, Rav Chaim of Elazhin has certain hasagas that he says he saw different things, but it's brought down, the post can bring down, that Rav Chaim of Elazhin is not the most reliable Eid Re'iyah, because he did not see the Gra with the frequency that the other Dayanim did it, and the Gra could have decided, you know, one time to do something else for whatever the reason, but in terms of what the Gra's constant minhagim were, Rav Chaim is actually said not to be the most reliable source. But be it as it may, everyone knows Rav Chaim of Elazhin was so aduk in the Torah of the Gra. So in the Nefesh HaChaim, where he brings all sorts of Makairis, Gemaras, Midrashim, Zohar must be 500 times the Nefesh HaChaim. Kisvei Ari, certainly more than 100 times, maybe 200 times. He quotes the Gra, or he refers to the Gra only twice in the whole Nefesh HaChaim. Now the Gra wrote a lot on Kabbalah. There's a tremendous amount the Gra wrote on Kabbalah. The Gra himself wrote more on Kabbalah than he wrote on Halacha. Tikkuni Zayar, Safrid Tznius, many Chalakim of the Zayar. And Rav Chaim actually wrote Hakdamas to those, so he certainly was aware of the Gra's work. So why does he quote the Gra so infrequently in the Nefesh HaChaim? I mean, the Gra has so much to say. But once again, the answer is Pashut. If you understand that Rav Chaim is essentially writing to an Eilam that might be Nimshach to the ideas of Chassidus, whether he's writing to Chassidim or whether he's writing to people who are not Chassidim, but they might be Nimshach, some of the dangerous ideas of Chassidus. So he has to give them the rayas that they're going to be makabo. Somebody is a chassid that's misnageh to the Gra, so you say, can't do that. The Vilna Gaon says that's not the right way of understanding. So what? The person might say, chas v'shalom, I'm not makabo with the Gra says. So Rav Chaim B'davka only uses the rayas, be'ikr, that are going to be makubo by the other side. That's how you convince somebody. If you have a different day than me, and you have your rayas, I'm not going to convince you necessarily by the rayas that appeal to me. I have to convince you by the rayas that appeal to you. And memela taka, it's makubal. That's the svar where Rav Chaim does not bring the Gra that often. So, in the first 3 shiurim, going back to my little introduction here, Rav Chaim makes his points that the Maisa is the Iker, that even if it's Shalom Lishma, that even without Kavana, a person should recognize how important his mitzvahs are. And Chas V'Shalom, even though Devekus is a great Madrega, but if the Devekus takes you away from the Halachos and the Pratim, then it's Yatsa, Secharei Behefseidei, whatever you think you accomplished, you've actually lost. But in the first 3 Sha'arim, it's gebayt in a very, very heavy structure of many, many rayas. The prakim is a very, it's a much easier chelik of the sefer, is a very, very direct statement of where he felt these hashkafas of chassidus were making mistakes. And there aren't that many rayas, so it's very beferish Now, he's very gentle. He's not, I mean, the Gra was much tougher. The Gra put them in Chayram, and the Gra called them over there, Avodah Zarah. He does not. He calls them Mevakshei Hashem. He calls them Mevakshei Hashem. And he says they're misled. But he does take the gloves off in the sense that he's very direct and very explicit. So consequently, some want to posit that Rav Chaim instructed that in certain towns, when they print Nefesh HaChaim, they should print it without the Prakim. They should just go from Shar Gimel to Shar Dalet. Because although the critique, everything in the Prakim is in the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, but in the rest of the Sefer, it's kind of covered up. In the Prakim, it is very explicit and very beferish. And that is why some want to say he called it Prakim, because his Kavanah was, it's only a speculation, I don't think anyone has a definitive proof on this, although they do say, they do have proof that in some cities, Prakim was in the Nefesh HaChaim, and some cities not. That is a historical fact, but whether that was Rav Chaim's Kavanah in why he made these Prakim in the middle, that I think nobody really knows. Nobody really knows for sure. But this is why we have these two editions. By the way, I mentioned in the Tanya share, that in the Tanya, you have a similar thing. That in the in Chelek Beis of the Tanya, Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna, so there's a passage there about those people who think they are great Chachamim and say that Tzimtzum, divine contraction, means Hashem left this world and allowed physicality to exist, Hashem should forgive them for their ignorance. Now, the Alter Rebbe does not say who are these people that think they're wise. Some interpret that he's actually referring to the Vilna Gaon who took that position. Others say it's not Shaykh, that the Alter Rebbe himself would not have referred to the Vilna Gaon that way. There are other letters, he had great coverage for the Vilna Gaon, he was referring to somebody else. But what's interesting is that Chelek of the Tanya, that page, was not printed, it was in the Ksav Yad of the Tanya, but at the Alter Rebbe's instruction. It was not in the printed Tanya, it was not printed till 1900. You know, over 100 years later. And the reason is because people would take it, even if it wasn't his Kavana, people would take it as an attack on the Gra. And in the early years at least, that would have caused war, that would have caused physical war. Unfortunately, later in Niskatnu Adairis, so people became less Kanoa stick, or they didn't bother to read it, or whatever it is. People didn't, you see, you read Esoteris. In other words, they're willing to put something in that at an earlier Tekufa would have literally led to fighting. So the same cheshbon in the opposite direction, why the Balatanya deleted a reference that might have been understood or misunderstood as an attack on the Gra, so too, Rav Chaim didn't want to put in the Prakim in different versions of the Nefesh HaChaim. Okay, so that's kind of the idea of the Prakim. And again, the Prakim is very, very important. That's really you could actually call it the summary of the Sefer. It is easier to read than any other part of the Sefer. It is very, very direct. And we'll go over it more biarichas next week. But just to make a primary point, Rav Chaim deeply discusses the idea of how the Yetzer Hara fools a person. He says, there is a lower Yetzer Hara, that where I want to learn, the Yetzer Hara simply says, go out and eat, go to sleep, go be mezana. But he says, when a person is a mensch, a person has a certain tzura of a gavra, the Yetzer Hara can't stamazai tell the person, go out and sin. Go out and be mechalel Shabbos. At some point, we're beyond it on some level. So, what does the Yetzer Hara do to us when we're no longer going to be tempted by being Mechal Shabbos, going eating treif? So he says the Yetzer Hara is very smart. The Yetzer Hara will not tell you to sin, but the Yetzer Hara will convince you that something is a mitzvah, something is an avaida, and that will get you to do it. So the Yetzer Hara will tell you something like, again, that if you're in the middle of a devekus in Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Chatzais is coming up, and you're supposed to stop and eat the Afikaimen, the Yetzer Hara will say, isn't the whole purpose of these mitzvahs to be Mekasher you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Right? In other words, Rav Chaim is basically saying that much of the emphasis on Devekos is a new ploy of the Yetzer Hara that can no longer be machshel you in sin, because you'll say no to that, but tries to convince you that something is a mitzvah. Now, that's a very difficult Yetzer Hara, because how do you then know, right? I mean, if I have a desire to do something that seems to be b'kedusha, then how do I know if it's the Yetzer Hara that is distorting my judgment? Or, that's what I'm supposed to do, it's kadosh. Ah, that's the subtlety, right? That's why he wrote Nefesh HaChaim, to kind of help us in this. But that's the great subtlety, he says, and he offers a beautiful interpretation. This is the meaning of the statement that Chazal say, the Yetzer Hara is called a zavuv. The Yetzer Hara is called a fly. Now, and the lashon of the Gemara is, it's yoshev al shnei pischei lev. It sits on the two sides of the heart. So what's the shaychus of the fly on the two sides of the heart? So he says, al pi kabbalah, the Yetzer Hara lives, so to speak, whatever that means, in the chalal hasmali, in the left ventricle of the heart. And the Yetzer Tov is in the right ventricle. Whatever that means, I don't know what it means scientifically. So like this. The Yetzer Tov is always Tov. The Yetzer Tov never tries to be machshel you. So the Yetzer Tov doesn't move around. The Yetzer Tov is always located b'chalo hayamini. But the Yetzer Hara has to move around, so to speak. When the Yetzer Hara, when you're weak and you could be machshel you b'yavera, the Yetzer Hara operates out of his station in the left ventricle that says, do bad, do bad, do bad. But when you're not going to succumb to that. The Yetzer Hara, as it were, has to move into the place of the Yetzer Tov and try to control you from there. So that's the meaning, that the Yetzer Hara is like a fly that moves around to different places where you're going to be vulnerable. And that's what this is really what he sees as the sakana of his generation, that in the she'ifa for ruchnius, the yearning for ruchnius, which is a great, great thing, people will denigrate the idea of keeping the mitzvahs kahalacha and in the union of Talmud Torah, right? So this is his classic defense. Again, the whole Nefesh HaChaim is about this, but the Prakim is the basic summary. So we'll go over next week in a little more arichas. This is the aside of what he's doing here. Okay?